Hello and welcome to the Tech Disruptors podcast. In this podcast series, we talk with CEOs and management teams about their views on tech disruption and how it is driving their decision-making and strategy. My name is Sunil Rajagopal, software analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence and independent equity research arm at Bloomberg. And I have with me Tom Siebel, founder and CEO at C3 AI. Tom, it's great to have you back on our podcast, and I'm sure this will be an enriching conversation. And I say this because you bring an extensive knowledge and experience of the software industry that I believe is marching closer to the 50-year mark. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Sunil. Thank you for having me.
Tom, I know last time my colleague Anurag Rana hosted you on this show, and I would love to take that conversation forward. But before that, can you give a 30,000 feet overview of what C3 AI is all about?
Yes. As we have developed the information technology industry, going back, say, the last, 45 years, okay, we've moved from mainframe computing to mini computing to personal computing to cloud computing. We've developed, as it relates to the commercial applications of technology, mini computing was a big breakthrough. Relational database was a big breakthrough. And on top of that, we built enterprise application software, ERP, CRM, supply chain, manufacturing, what have you. And this now, these technologies enable us to operate the large global multinational corporations that we operate. And the, this business of enterprise application software, it's about, a $700 billion business today that allows organizations to report to the SEC and to their investors on what their inventories were, what their revenue was, what their customer churn was, where their supply chain broke down, et cetera. Now, as we power into the 21st century, we have some new breakthroughs in information technology that include elastic cloud computing, big data, Internet of Things, and these in turn enable predictive analytics, what we know of as of enterprise AI, okay, AGI, these large language models, okay, what have you. Now, when we apply these predictive analytics to enterprise applications, they become predictive. And so what does that mean? Rather than simply report on, be able to report to your board of directors on where your supply chain broke down so that you couldn't ship 737s, or where your equipment failed, like how many 737s fell out of the air, okay, or how many customers left you because of these kinds of problems, what your cash balances were. Using predictive analytics, we can now identify where the supply chain is going to break down, remediate, and figure out how to ship the products on time in full to the customer. With predictive maintenance, we can identify device failure and system failure before it happens and prevent the failure. Using predictive analytics, we can identify customer churn. Not identify customer churn at Verizon or Bank of America after it happened, but we can identify which customers by name are going to leave us in the next 180 days so we can take action to save those customers. So basically what AI enables us to do when we apply it to enterprise application software, and this looks like roughly $1 billion software market. So this will be the largest market that we've seen in the history of enterprise application software. It allows us to change the future. And no CEO is going to be able to survive a board meeting in 3 years where he or she stands up and reports on, how many planes fell out of the air, where the customer, where the supply chain broke, or how many customers left us, when the technologies are there to identify device failure before it happens so the plane doesn't fall out of the air, okay, to identify glitches in the supply chain before they happen so they can remediate, deliver the product on time in full, and we have the technologies to prevent customer churn. So these are the types of things to which we apply AI in the enterprise that fundamentally change everything about the way that we manage the company. We design products, we deliver products, okay, at lower cost, At lower environmental impact, at higher quality, into the hands of more satisfied customers.
Now, you touched upon a lot of concepts, including predictive maintenance and predictive analytics, which I will come back later. But when you started C3 AI, what was the grand vision and where are you today on that and what's still to come?
The grand vision when we began, so we after we sold Siebel Systems to my colleague Larry Ellison at Oracle in 2006, we started thinking about what was next. And we thought next was about elastic cloud computing, big data, and the Internet of Things. And so we spent the next 10 years and a couple billion dollars building a software platform that would allow organizations, the largest organizations that you can imagine, to design, develop, provision, and operate predictive analytics applications. Now, the first problem to which we applied this stack in 2010, 2011, and 2012 was really clean energy. The utility industry worldwide had just was in the process of spending $2 trillion to upgrade the power grid to this thing we call the smart grid. And the smart grid, all of the devices in the grid infrastructure, the grid being the largest and most complex machine ever conceived of and built by man, is basically all of the devices, transformers, substations, reclosers, capacitance banks, transformers, etc., become remotely machine addressable. This is a massive IoT opportunity. And so this was the first industry that was really prepared to take advantage of predictive analytics so we could optimize these grid infrastructures and make them more efficient, more energy efficient, have less environmental impact, and allow organizations to deliver safer, more reliable, cleaner energy, into the hands of more satisfied consumers at lower cost. And so we did this in Europe and North America. That was the first industry to adopt. The second industry, interestingly enough, was oil and gas. After that, it was manufacturing. Then we've seen pharma, defense, intelligence, and now, all industries are adopting these technologies.
Right. Haven't we seen a similar shift happening in the telecom space too, wherein much of the work was hardware driven and now it is everything of the network management is software driven?
Yeah, the network is everything, and it is all software driven, and we need to be able to reconfigure this network in, real time in microseconds. And so it is definitely a software problem. And the telecommunications companies are very much at the leading edge of that.
This week, we are going this big AI slash GPU technology conference. Can you take us through some big picture developments that you have seen in the AI space over the last 10 years, and particularly how it is shaping up the predictive maintenance and predictive analytics business that you talked about?
Well, when we started, Sunil, in 2009, understand AWS was just getting started. Google Cloud didn't exist. Azure didn't exist, and the GPU didn't exist. So we predicted that all of this would happen, and we were talking about AI in the enterprise and predictive analytics a decade before anybody actually had given it any thought. So then, say, 13 years later, we see the announcement of, ChatGPT, and everybody kind of goes crazy and realizes that now this is now a mandate for everyone. So we were a little bit ahead of this. I think that where does this go? I would say that probably the most disruptive change we've seen after you get beyond the cloud, then supervised learning, unsupervised learning, reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning is not new. I mean, it's been around since Marvin Minsky thought about it at Princeton in 1951. But we needed the underlying technologies in place, cloud, what have you, to be able to realize the benefit of these technologies. Disruptive was generative AI. This is hugely disruptive. And this is, a very important technology. It does change everything. It changes, it's really been a jarring wake-up call for, every government leader, every military leader, and every corporate leader to figure out how am I going to take use of these technologies, make use of these technologies, and how do they threaten my business? But generative AI is incredibly important. fundamentally changes the nature of the human-computer interaction model in very positive ways. It has, enormous opportunity for good, and also it has enormous opportunity for, for deleterious effects that will accrue that we need to be prepared for. But generative AI is just unknowably large.
You touched on generative AI, and what I see here is C3 AI also has certainly seen two major shifts. Let's talk about the first one, which is on the business front. You have moved your focus to consumption model from licensing model. How is that changing your customer conversations, and how is the new logo momentum progressing?
Yeah, I would say this was about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, we made this transition from subscription-based pricing. Then by subscription-based pricing, we mean companies would make multi-year, multi-million dollar, irrevocable, non-refundable commitments to us, to consumption-based pricing, which just says, install the product, you pay for it, I don't know, 50 cents per vCPU hour, and just use it as long as you want to use it. And if you don't want to use it, turn it off. And so there's no commitment. As a result of that, the number of customers that you can imagine we do business with has increased dramatically. We've brought our pricing model in line with the industry standards for AI and the cloud, and it's enabled to expand our business just dramatically. So our business, we're now, growing at a pretty good clip. We expect, accelerated growth going forward. And this is just this is the pricing model of the future as it relates to AI and cloud computing. And we've come into compliance with that, and everybody's happy. More customers, happier customers, easier to do business. You don't have to sign a 10, 20, 30, 40, $50 million contract to get started. You just get started and go and keep it as long as you like it.
Now, you touched about pricing model and also a bit about revenue model. Let's focus a little bit on the product front. You are supercharging your focus on the applications business, and I see you are targeting multiple verticals and business functions. What does that shift look like, and what has been the customer reception?
Well, initially, before we could build the applications, we needed to build the platform. So the platform represents, say 10, 12 years of engineering and a couple of $1 billion worth of software engineering to build a software platform that allows organizations to build, or us, to build enterprise predictive analytics applications for virtually any enterprise AI problem. Now, we've used that platform today to build, I believe, over 60 turnkey enterprise applications for the value chains of manufacturing, defense, intelligence, telecommunications, healthcare, utilities, power, oil and gas, okay, what have you. Well, what people want are applications. So people really don't want tools to build applications. Like, nobody wants tools to build an ERP application. They want an ERP application. Nobody wants tools to build a CRM application. They want a CRM application. And so what we've built is, as a result of the 15 years of work that we've done, now we have this huge kind of Cambrian explosion going on in AI. And there's one company in the world that has 60 turnkey enterprise applications that address the value chains of, I don't know, seven or eight or nine industries, and that would be C3 AI. So we're pretty well positioned. And now going forward, you can expect us to expand into consumer packaged goods, travel, transportation, pharmaceuticals, what have you. In the long run, everybody adopts these technologies. And in the long run, we will transition from a platform company, although we'll use the platform, to, and we are transitioning to an enterprise application software company and a generative AI application software company.
From what you just said, one thing that caught my attention is the federal business. And federal business appears to be the new battleground, as we've seen a lot of technology vendors are pursuing new opportunities in that front. And these agencies are also modernizing and adopting new technologies. What does the federal IT spend budget look like today, and how are you chasing all these different verticals with your platform?
We've been active in the defense and intelligence community going back to, I'd say, 2017. We have about a dozen applications today. We're active in, you know, contested logistics for Transcom, contested logistics for Defense Logistics Agency, kind of multi-domain command and control, predictive maintenance. The predictive maintenance work we do for the Air Force is one of the largest AI applications in deployment on Earth, and I believe the only AI system of record in DoD. We're doing work with clearance adjudication. Clearances would be like top secret SEI, and we can use, you know, our data aggregation and analytics capability to help and expedite the clearance process so it doesn't take so long to process these clearances. So we're, you know, very much involved in, you know, everything from the human capital management to logistics in the battlefield, supply chain optimization. It's a large and growing field. You know, as we look at the next generation of the kill chain, and a lot of this has to do with China versus the United States, be it, you know, subsurface autonomous vehicles, space, cyber, you know, whether we're dealing with, you know, hypersonics, you know, AI is at the heart of all of these technologies. And, you know, but for a robust AI technology, you cannot operate this next generation of technology, and you will not be able to compete, okay, as it relates to, you know, geopolitical friction. As a result, we're seeing the Department of Defense and the intelligence communities kind of redouble their efforts. I would say that 10 years ago, they used to be spending most of their effort trying to build these stacks themselves. And increasingly, they're relying on the private sector and companies like C3 AI to solve these problems for them. So the extent that we have an opportunity to participate in that community, and I think our, you know, our, that business is growing very rapidly. I think revenue might have grown 100% year over year. You know, it's a privilege to be able to serve.
Do we know what is the overall IT spend budget for the federal government by any chance?
No, I do not know the answer to that. Okay, you know, it's a good question. As it relates to AI, I'm actually not certain there is a budget. Okay, I think. The rough numbers, I think the defense budget is about $800 billion. And as it relates to investment in AI, I think they're going to spend whatever it takes to get the job done, because the alternative is that the Chinese prevail. And if the Chinese prevail in the development of these technologies, that gets massively problematic.
I know AI is definitely an important aspect, both for businesses and from a geopolitical angle. One thing that I want to touch upon is from your previous presentations, you talked about how your AI model differentiates itself from competition, particularly on how you could better address issues such as hallucination and provide deterministic results. Do you still have that edge? Because what we have seen largely in the AI space over the last 12 months, we've seen massive increase in terms of the overall machine intelligence. And so how are you planning to keep an edge over others?
I think the edge comes, Sunil, from the couple billion dollars that we built building the platform. The platform architecture, and in the platform we have, for example, there's no form of data that we can't ingest. So this is not unimodal, this is omnimodal. This is, you know, structured data, unstructured data, images, text, voice, signals, ERP data, okay, what have you. So when we go into a place like Koch Industries or Shell or the Department of the Air Force, we can ingest all of their data into a unified federated image. Now, other problems that we've solved as part of the core platform, for example, identity. Identity is, this is the sine qua non for an enterprise application. You need to identify who that person is, and you need to have access controls, allowing certain people access to certain data, whatever the rules might be, encryption in motion, encryption at rest, n-factor authentication, etc. So we've solved, and I've spent, 4 decades in this business and enterprise application software, but that is the, that this is table stakes for an enterprise application. Now, all of that is built into our platform. Now enter the large language models. Okay, the problem with the large language models are replete with hobgoblins that prevent their being installed in any responsible enterprise. Okay, these large language models, and to the extent that you've used them, whether it's Gemini or Cat or ChatGPT or whatever it might be, this. The answers are stochastic. What every time you ask a question, you get a different answer. Your data access controls are not enforced so that everybody gets access to whatever they have. If it doesn't know the answer, it hallucinates. Okay, it's a real problem. Go on to any one of these and have it make up a story for you. These theories are pretty creative and they're crazy. Okay? You can't tell where the answer's coming from. And so there's traceability. In fact, the large language model doesn't know where the answer is coming from. We have problems associated with these large language models of what we call data exfiltration. And you and others have written about that with Samsung, where all of a sudden all their intellectual property is published on the open World Wide Web. Zico Coulter and others at places like Carnegie Mellon are writing massively about the cyber attack vectors that these large language models open. We have this hallucination problem, which is very difficult. We have IP liability issues, and they're LLM specific. Now, those are for any one of those reasons, Sunil. Okay, this LLM is not being installed. Okay, it's not being installed at Department of Defense. It's not any LLM. It's not being installed at Bank of America, and it's not being installed at, say, GSK. No way, no how, this dog doesn't hunt. Now, when you combine the LLM model with the C3i platform, we have solved all those problems. So every time you ask the question, you get the same answer. It takes you exactly to ground truth where you know where the answer came from. There's no risk of hallucination. We actually don't allow the LLM to have access to the data. We've been a firewall between the access to the data. We have identity control. Come on, we've nailed that. Unimodal is where all these LLMs are. That means you can put in anything you want as long as it's text or code. Well, we're omnimodal. We're the masters of the universe at this. And at all of the installations that we have, there's no form of data that we can't ingest. No risk of hallucination, no risk of data exfiltration because the LLM has no access to the data. We have no IP liability risk because we're not the only data we're using are the enterprise's data. So all of the hobgoblins associated with these LLMs we've solved. So we have a highly differentiated product. And by the way, we're LLM agnostic. Whatever LLM you want to use is fine with us. You want to use Grok, fine. You want to use Mistral, fine. You want to use ChatGPT-4, fine. Gemini, Bedrock, doesn't matter. They're all partners with us. But we've taken all of the advantages that these products offer, which are really considerable, okay, and we've removed all of the hobgoblins that prevent their installation in a responsible enterprise.
Tom, I think you brought about a lot of interesting aspects on key things to watch out when someone is deploying all these LLM models. And I think that is also what is drawing big regulatory scrutiny around the AI models, especially with the developments that we've seen in the European Union, which passed a law with regarding to the AI. What is your take on that, and how will that shape up the AI-led businesses?
Well, I think we need to look at the outcomes, okay, rather than we need to regulate the outcomes rather than regulate the technology. I think much of this discussion, like the EU AI Act, and which I encourage you to read if you haven't, okay, and the discussions that are going on in Washington, D.C. about regulation, says that we're going to form large bureaucracies that are going to which we are going to have to submit any algorithm before it's published. Now, and these bureaucracies are going to, kind of like the FDA, they're going to inspect these algorithms and ensure that they're safe before they're published. Now, The rate at which we publish algorithms today is just staggering, and we have machines publishing algorithms. So there isn't enough money, there isn't enough intellect, and it's really an impossible problem. Why is it impossible? Okay. This presumes that the person who wrote this algorithm understand how it works. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. When we get into these large language models, I mean, the truth is nobody knows how they work. They're inexplicable. When we get into any of these deep learning models, they're inexplicable. So the idea that we're going to, inspect these dual-use foundational models to make sure that they're safe is candidly just crazy. And so it's now the so I think we need to look at outcomes rather than the technology. We need to regulate the use. We need to make it, unlawful to use these technologies, for example, to violate personal privacy. I mean, come on, who's not for the right to be forgotten? Simply pass a law that says that if we want to be forgotten, we can tell the person using the AI, hey, take us off your system and forget it. And it's an easy law to publish. And if they don't comply, take the person in charge and put them in jail, and the next person will comply. It needs to be unlawful to use these technologies, for example, to propagate public health hazards. And they are being used to propagate public health hazards, and we know this. See what's going on with social media, teenagers in the United States, 9.6% of teenagers suffer from, depression, suicide, body image issues. Okay. We know this is linked to the AI and social media. It's a well-established fact. So when these technologies are used to deleterious effect, we need to make that unlawful. But I think that, these technologies are important. We need to be very thoughtful about how we control them, because uncontrolled, they cause enormous damage. I mean, we will have, you see what's going on in China with, social compliance scoring. Well, that will happen in the UK, and that will happen in the United States unless we prevent it. And the social compliance scoring kind of is, they have their idea of, what's woke in China. And to the extent that you're not woke, okay, you don't go to college, you don't travel, you don't get a visa, and you can't buy a house. Well, this will, that will happen in Europe, and it'll happen in the United States unless we prevent it. So I do think these are important issues. I think these technologies will bring enormous social and economic benefit. It will increase GDP growth. It will increase the profitability of companies, but also these technologies will be misused by bad actors, including democratic governments, and private enterprise. And we need to prevent that misuse. So I think it's very important, but I think that much of the thought that is gone into regulation to date is not well considered.
Tom, I think you provide a lot of perspectives on the topic of regulation, which is quite interesting. And maybe perhaps switching gears, can you talk a little bit about how you are deploying AI to drive up productivity within C3 AI?
Yeah, our own company, actually, we're using AI in a big way as it relates to, we recently released a kind of version 8 of our product. It's called version 8.3. And it's like orders of magnitude faster, bigger, handles more data, includes generative AI. It's an enormously powerful product. And as part of that, we have the C3 AI community. And the C3 AI community enables you to, take all the training that you need, all the classes, and immediately build applications. And as you build applications, we use generative AI to, it'll tell you, how do I build this? How do I build this? How do I build this component? It'll write the code for you. Okay. It'll correct the code that you have. And this is, one of the areas where we're using AI, at C3 for our own programmers, but also providing it to all of our customers to facilitate their use of our applications and make it easier to develop these applications. As it relates to use, okay, I would say the biggest burden to impediment to people realizing the benefit of these digital transformations relates to change management. Okay. And this is this whole idea that we've seen with these discussions in the last 3 years that we need to train everybody to be a data scientist, take advantage of AI. Honestly, that's a bunch of bunk. Okay. With generative AI, we can fundamentally change the nature of the human-computer interface for these complex applications. And generative AI basically looks like a mosaic browser. And rather than have these complex enterprise applications like SAP, Siebel Systems, ServiceNow, Salesforce, you name it. Okay, I mean they're all, and then we get to these defense intelligence applications that are mind-numbingly complex, where only a specialist can use these applications. Or quite honestly, even behind me, you can't see it, I don't think, is a Bloomberg terminal. One of the most incredibly powerful, I mean, incredibly powerful device, and nobody can figure out how to use more than 4% of the functionality that's there. Well, imagine that. So, in order to take advantage of these technologies when they're AI enabled, you're not going to need to know anything about data science. There's simply going to be the interface is going to be a mosaic browser. And rather than type, F13 control shift to find out what the, who are the largest shareholders in Bloomberg or whatever it might be, you simply ask, who are the largest shareholders in Bloomberg? And it gives you the answer. And so it enables us to, using a user interface metaphor with which everybody is familiar, the Mosaic browser, everyone knows how to use it. Most of the people know it as, Google copied it, and that's the Mosaic browser. Everybody knows how to use it. And so here we have an interface that in a defense application, the chair of the Joint Chiefs can use it. Okay, the private on the front line can use it, the Secretary of Defense can use it. Simply ask the question to get the answer. So I think that we're now using generative AI to fundamentally change the nature of the human-computer interaction model for all of our enterprise applications, so that they're very easily adopted across the enterprise. So we really address and solve the change management problem, and that's enabled. I think it's one of the most important attributes of generative AI.
I certainly agree with you, and I'm sure we will see a big shift across a wide spectrum of industries on the overall customer user interface. And just staying on the AI theme, I think a couple of weeks back you had this big event, C3 Transform 2024 event. Are there any aspects of that you would like to highlight? And what has been the customer conversations since then?
Well, the customer applications have accelerated. I think one of the most interesting things that we unveiled at kind of beyond generative AI as it relates to the human-computer interaction model at Transform was C3 AI Vision, and this got a lot of buzz. So this is now the intersection of augmented reality with enterprise AI applications. And I think that the work that Apple is doing there is very important. And so these Apple Vision Pro devices, I think today, let's be honest, okay, today they're too heavy, they're a little clunky, they give you a headache after about a half an hour. But this is Apple computer and they're not going to stand still. So let's give it 12, 24 months. We all know what it'll look like. I mean, it's going to be something about as heavy as our glasses, okay, about as obstructive as our glasses, and we'll be able to basically, and what we demonstrated at Transform was an intelligence application. And the idea is what we want in defense and intelligence, and defense intelligence. And so what we want, whether it's the Straits of Taiwan or the port of Taiwan, we want a common view of the battlefield. And we have all of these various sources of data. High orbit sat, low orbit sat, drone, AIS, ground-based intel. AIS is like a transponder on a ship. Okay, ground-based intel, and we need to fuse those data to figure out what was going on. So what we showed them in a non-classified environment, we showed our users in using augmented reality, and this is very much Black Mirror-like, if you've seen Black Mirror, but this is the future, where you put on the goggles and pretty soon you just put on your glasses and you see floating in air, five computer screens. And we all share this common view of the world. And at first, we're looking at the planet and we're looking at all the satellites, higher and low orbit sats that are circulating around the planet. And then what you look at is basically what you, it's just like pointing a mouse at something. And so we can look at LA and spread our fingers apart, and the planet will spin apart and we'll expand and about, we'll drill down. All of a sudden, we're looking at the port of LA. And the, you know, as we see the port of Los Angeles, okay, high orbit set, low orbit set, AIS, and drone have all moved with us. They're all now moving at the port of LA. And we're watching all the shipping traffic moving in and out of the port of LA. Okay, then, and we can see again, high orbit sat, low orbit sat, drone, and common view where they're all fused together. And all of a sudden, one of these guys turns red. Okay, well, and we said, okay, click on it. Why is it red? It's red because it just turned its transponder off, or in fact, it's spoofing us. It's really 150 miles in a, there's a difference between 150 miles from where it is and where it says it is. Okay, now we're interested. Okay, so let's we touch our fingers together, look at it, touch our fingers together. It'll tell us, you know, what port this is from, what flag it has, what the displacement is, what year it was made. Okay, we can click again, and we can see the history for the last 4 years of every place this place has been on the planet. So we can see the shipping tracks, and lo and behold, this thing tends to go back and forth between the South China Sea and Los Angeles a lot. Then we can look at a drone, which is now we look at the, which is tracking this guy, and we can see with, you know, 12 centimeter resolution exactly what's on the deck of the ship. We can play back the tape. And we can see the ship being boarded by trucks, you know, at the port of LA. And you, with low orbit sat, again, 12 centimeter resolution, we can read the license plate number. So we see it get shipped. We see it get to go to the point where it turns the license plate off. And we see it in all of these modes, including the fused mode. Okay, now let's get into predictive analytics. We know where it is. We know where it came from. We know what's on it. Okay, where is this darn thing going? Okay, so this is where analytics comes in, and it gives us three possible routes, and it has a 75% probability, say, that this is going to San Diego. And now we can dispatch our intel assets to track this guy as it moves towards San Diego, and if necessary, arrange for a welcoming party. And so this, you know, I think augmented reality, we combine augmented reality with AI and generative AI. We're going to, I mean, this has applicability. Let's take for supply chain. At Maersk, we're going to be able to look at the planet and see every ship on the planet at Maersk. We look at the planet, click on it, it tells us what time it's going to arrive in Oakland. We can see in real time this ship get boarded by pirates, you know, in the Indian Ocean off of Somalia. I mean, so this is really remarkable technology as it relates. People think AR is about video games and, you know, and FaceTime and watching high resolution movies. And does it have utility there? I think it does. Okay, but I know it has utility, okay, in enterprise applications where we can look at supply chains, we can look at, you know, oil field operations in the Permian, we could look at lumber production operations, we could monitor the, you know, production of interferon at Genentech, okay, at the factory floor. And so augmented reality is going to have a big impact on enterprise applications. And we introduced that at C3 AI, called C3 AI Vision. And that perhaps is what that and generative AI, I think, generated the most buzz.
Now, since you mentioned about AR and generative AI, what does it mean for your compute requirements? How many H100s, how many H200s would you need, and maybe the Blackwells?
I'm sorry, black wealth?
Yeah,
I don't understand
Blackwell.
that.
I mean, the chip that NVIDIA launched yesterday with their
Oh,
event.
I'm sorry, I missed that announcement. It's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up with Jensen because he's moving pretty fast.
Yeah, right.
Jensen's a genius. We are and will be using massive CPU and GPU resources for these applications. And the good news is that, I mean, you know, that those runways are being built for us, and so there's no shortage of capacity as far as we go, as far as it relates to our business, between our partners at NVIDIA, Google, Azure, AWS, they are building that capacity. And, you know, this is evidenced by the revenue numbers and unit numbers at Google that are nothing short of staggering. Excuse me, at NVIDIA, they're nothing short of staggering. And they are building exactly the infrastructure that we need for our customers to expand the use of their applications. And it's very clear that that infrastructure is there and will be there.
Now, Tom, before we move on to our concluding section, I want to ask one question that we often get from investors is on the management. And how are you thinking about your management pool, and how are you looking to develop the leadership chain?
I think I have, if not the one of the most experienced management teams, okay, in all of enterprise application software. And we look at, I mean, we're a, you know, extraordinarily high performance culture. We employ about 1,000 people today. Okay. We had 42,000 people apply for jobs last quarter at C3, 42,000. Okay. I think we interviewed about 4,000 and hired 85. So we're enormously fortunate in the best and the brightest want to come to work here. But if you look at our technology team, you look at our finance team, you look at our products team, you look at our sales team, okay, you will not find more distinguished and experienced professionals in the information technology business. Hard stop. I mean, these people at many of these other companies, okay, who are perceived of as leaders in the industry, be it ServiceNow, okay, be it SAP, be it Salesforce, Sunil, I trained these people. Okay. I trained them. Okay. I gave many of these people their first jobs in software and they learned their jobs from me. Okay. And now, and they are perceived of as giants. Okay. This is just fact. Okay. And okay. I was there when we hired Marc Benioff, okay, in 1986, okay, from business school at USC, and he had never seen a computer. Okay. I was there when we gave Bill McDermott his first job in software. Okay, and Bill, I don't think he'd ever seen a computer. He worked at Xerox. So so we do know some of these people, and some of these people who are perceived as giants, and they are giants. And we hired them and we trained them. And the people who work at C3AI, they are the next generation Marc Benioff, the next generation Bill McDermott, the next generation Jim Snabe. That's the people who work here.
Great, Tom. That brings us to our final section that I call as final three, and your answers to these can be one-liners. So my first question here is, what is the one thing that worries you most about AI?
I think that, you know, AI in the form of governments and in the hands of governments, okay, and in the hands of private enterprise, absent really thoughtful regulation, will be misused to enormous deleterious effect, okay, on privacy, you know, on social controls. So, you know, this could get Orwellian very fast, and we need to be afraid.
My second question here, who will reap the most in the AI age? Will that be chip vendors or software vendors?
Oh, I don't think there's a zero-sum game there. I think the chip vendors are going to do just fine. I think that my friend Jensen at NVIDIA is going to do just fine. I think the software companies that play in the space, be it the whether it be the infrastructure providers like Azure and AWS and Google, who are killing it, or the application companies like C3AI, I think there's going to be enormous opportunity. Who do I think will really benefit? Consumers will benefit, constituents will benefit. I mean, that's who will benefit because we're going to deliver, you know, higher quality products, okay, at lower cost into more satisfied consumers at lower environmental impact. So I think it's the consumers and the constituents who win.
All right, so the final question. Do you think we have enough talent today that could take control and understand the workings of AI-generated workflows?
No. Okay. I think it's, I mean, we're going into the next generation of computing is not deterministic. So historically, computing has been deterministic. It's been a mathematical certainty, okay, what the outcome was of the program. Okay, once you worked the bugs out, it was a mathematical certainty. Okay, now these applications become stochastic. Okay, and it's uncertain what the outcome is, and honestly, it's inexplicable what they do. And if you really tear back, you peel back all the layers of the onion of generative AI, the truth is nobody can explain how it works. Okay, there is really nobody can explain how it works. So we're off in a whole new frontier where we've never been before. And this is electricity, we knew how it worked. The steam engine, we knew how it worked. The Jacquard loom, we knew how it worked. The production line, we knew how it worked. Okay, the transistor, we knew how it worked. Software, we knew how it worked. The semiconductor, we knew how it worked. Now, when we get into generative AI, deep learning, and neural networks, the fact is it is not possible for a human being to be able to explain how these applications work. And that is, so the idea that we have enough human capital to explain it, no, it's impossible. We will not be able to explain how these technologies work. And so it's beyond the capacity of the human mind. And so I realize that's a little bit scary, but that is the truth.
I think we all need to watch out for that. So, Tom, that brings us to the close of the podcast. Thank you very much for spending your valuable time with us and sharing insights on the big and evolving space of AI. Thank you, Tom.